Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. Get Christmas all wrapped up at Whitewater.
Okay, a couple of announcements. Don't forget to keep your messages coming. 0833 97 97 97. Email studio at kfmradio.com or you can call us on 045 898 999. The Kildare Wicklow SPCA will be holding its Christmas fair in the Heritage Centre in Kilcullen tomorrow between 11 and 4 and on Sunday from 11 to 3. There's a wide range of Christmas gifts and decorations on sale together with lots of other items as well. And even if you'd like to do some baking for their cake stall or you have some unwanted presents even at this stage or Christmas decorations, they'll be happy to call them or to collect them from you. Please call Anne on 086 341 3017. That's 086 341 3017 or email the Kildare Wicklow SPCA. What's that email address? It's at gmail.com. kwwspca@gmail.com if you want to help them out. And let's face it, they do excellent work. So that's Saturday and Sunday from 11 o'clock in the morning onwards. And just one other message to give you for the moment. We look at some others. On this Sunday, Robertson Tidy Towns is lighting up their Christmas village lights, tree and crib. However, very different because it'll be socially distant. Santa and all of that won't be able to shake hands with people. You know the story at that stage. The Robertson motto is where there is light, there is hope. So they want everyone to enjoy it but observe the COVID protocols. So that is happening this Sunday. They're calling it the Floating Candles event, which sounds very nice indeed. Now let's move on then to our opening item of this morning, and in regards to, you know, certainty and uncertainty is a message that's been emanating regarding government measures across lots of sectors. Just this morning, we're hearing news again of a change to something that had been announced previously. We were told that people entering the country from today would need these PCR tests. Not so now, says the government, because there's delays on it and it won't happen now until Sunday. So meanwhile, everybody will fly into the country under whatever previous protocols existed in regards to that. Now, that's been something that has also caused a lot of consternation in the school sector. We've spoken to two presidents of various teacher unions this week on the programme, and today we're joined by Páirí Clerkin, who's chief executive of the Irish Primary Principals Network. And earlier in the week, he said there needs to be clear, consistent and concise information on COVID-19 for school communities to ensure they remain open and safe. Let's hear more now. Good morning, Páirí, and thanks for joining us on Kildare Today.
Good morning, Sam. Thanks a million.
How disruptive has been what you call, I suppose if I just take the opposite of what you've said, unclear, inconsistent and not very precise information?
It's been very, very challenging for, you know, for school principals and deputy principals, but also for boards of management, for school staff, for parents, and in particular for children. You know, we've been advising our principals and deputy principals to really focus on encouraging and supporting the members of the school community, you know, with the implementation of all of the new public health measures. That's what they've been doing. That's what they'll continue to do. And I have to say that parents have been very, very supportive. But, you know, we're dealing with very young children. We have anxious parents. We have anxious children. They need our support. And, you know, we all need to work together as communities to enhance safety in our schools. That's what we all want. I think everybody wants the same thing. You know, we want to keep our schools open, but we want to keep them safe, and we want every possible measure in place that makes them safer. And that's why it's so important for people to work together. So when there isn't clear guidance, that causes tensions, it causes confusion, and that damages, I suppose, the confidence in any measure that's in place, and it certainly doesn't help to pull a community down. So that's why I've been calling for that very clear, consistent, concise information, so that everything that will be implemented across the schools that would be consistent and that it would lessen tensions, and certainly not do the opposite.
And the members you represent, are we the front line, is used widely in reference to the health sector. The members you represent are on the front line because they're the ones who are meeting the parents first at school doors and explaining to parents why their child might not be able to attend school. How do you feel about that aspect?
Well, you're right. We represent 6,000 school leaders who lead our 3,500 primary schools in the country. And you know, it has been really difficult for them. It's been a really, really challenging time. It has changed. The goalposts keep changing. That's nobody's fault. We're dealing with a pandemic. I suppose we've been really, really clear that and consistent ourselves, and that we have always said that we would be guided by public health. You know, we've had the recent advice in relation to 3rd to 6th class primary children, and that they should wear a mask at this time. But yeah, again, I go back to it. You know, everybody has the same objective. Our school leaders have to lead the communities, keep everybody on board, and that's really why it's so important that we have clear guidance, but also that we continue to look at every single measure that can be put in place to keep our schools safe. Like, we were very concerned when the contact tracing and testing was pulled back. And we're also really, really concerned that our school principals are finding it very, very difficult to contact public health and to get their advice and support in relation to COVID queries. We have a principal advice line that's there to support school principals. But I know, and I'm hearing, you know, from our members, that it can take 24 hours and longer just to get an answer from that line. And I know further to that, that the follow-up to it isn't happening, other than in special schools and in schools with special classes. There are no risk assessments being conducted in our mainstream primary schools. That's not acceptable if we want to keep our schools open and we want to keep them safe. We have to improve those measures. I understand everybody is under such incredible pressure. Our frontline health workers are doing a fantastic job. But, you know, we need extra resources put in place to ensure that we can keep our schools safe and keep them open for our young school children.
You know, your members are facing three cohorts. I've heard some considerable and reliable reports from schools around Kildare where principals have been subjected to really, really bad abuse at doors. We have three cohorts of parents arriving at doors. We have those who are very supportive and understand what needs to be done. We have those with real concerns who have children who might be upset about wearing masks or whatever. And then we have those who are implacably opposed to any kind of COVID measures.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, I just want to emphasise that the vast, vast majority of our school parents are so supportive, and they see this as a community response and a response where we all need to pull together. We'll always have situations where people are worried and they're anxious, and we have to, you know, sit down and talk through those concerns with people. But in relation to, you know, situations where there's resistance, and let's look at the situation, a parent who does not wish to follow the public health recommendations on face masks. Our boards of management need very clear guidance on how best to manage that situation. Like, we must all remember that we're dealing with young children, and the focus needs to be on supporting and encouraging and minimising tensions. So when there's a gap in terms of knowledge in relation or an agreed position in terms of how those situations should be dealt with, that's not good for our schools. That's very, very unfair to our school principals and our school deputy principals who are trying to deal with that on the gate, as you said. They need clear guidance, and it's not fair for our boards of management. Remember, we're really, really lucky in this country. Every single community has volunteers who sit on our boards of management, and they're actually charged with the responsibility of making decisions in relation to these crucial issues. They deserve better. They need clear guidance.
I wonder, for example, are you vulnerable to a litigation under all of this regarding people's constitutional rights to an education? Because the government, if you like, some people will remember an area in the past about another regulation where I think it was Minister Regina Doherty. It was in regards to, the PPS card or the public service card, whatever they call it. And at the time she made the wonderful statement of, it's not compulsory, but it's mandatory. Now, we all struggled to find out what was the difference. This time, in regards to the measure of children wearing face masks, the government has said it's a requirement, but it's not in the law, and principals should use discretion. Does that sound like passing the buck to you?
Well, I go back again to the point that we're dealing with very young children, and they need to be minded, and they need to be looked after. and this should be all about supporting and encouraging them. And by and large, like they just want to do what's right, and they want leadership, and so do their families. Now, in a situation, we're being very clear, you know, with our members, and we're saying, focus on that. Focus on helping children, on helping families, on supporting families. And we can't do anything else until we get absolute clarity in relation to those issues. So, like, what I would encourage every single board of management that's sitting down to look at a difficult situation, I'd advise every single board of management to seek further advice from their patron, from their management body, in relation to how they manage any of those situations. It needs to be pushed up the line so that we get the very best and the most accurate advice in terms of how we do it. Because at the end of the day, like this, it will only cause tension in a local community. And that's not going to help us as we face these very difficult challenges in the coming months in terms of keeping our schools open and keeping them safe. We, you know, people are under incredible pressure. There's a lot of tensions out there. We need to pull people together. We don't need to be. We don't need issues like this to be dividing people.
And the random question, Pádraig, because, and just to finish up on this, I've wondered about this over the last couple of days. My experience of working with children over many years was that they're extremely adaptable. We've looked at the secondary school sector, where, you know, and I take the difference as given between the different ages and the different maturity levels. But you could, of course, posit a counter-argument that teenagers can be far more rebellious because they're going through that stage of life. But yet, the measures seem to have gone very smoothly in the secondary sector. I know how protective parents will be of very, very young children. But my experience has been that children are very adaptable in the first place. And I'm just wondering if the whole parent sector, I know this is big ass now, needs to dial down, you know, because children pick up vibes, they pick up messages from parents, and where children might not be overly concerned about something, if they see and hear parents overreacting, they can then internalise that.
Absolutely, and I think we need to do more more listening to children and giving them a voice, and there's, you know, the one thing that I've always found with young children is when you give them the opportunity to lead, they stand up and they love taking responsibility. I think we should listen to them. I think they do adapt. I think that they often they talk themselves, and they have an instinct for what is right and what we need to do. And I think that all children want here is they don't want at the moment to be wearing masks in school, but they know that this is something that will help to keep them safer. And they know that they want to stay in school. Children want, they do not want to be facing a situation after Christmas time where they're not able to go back into school. They need that in their lives, especially at this very difficult time. So I believe that children do adapt. I think we should do more listening to them and include them in conversations. And I do believe that this situation, by and large, that children and our special needs children, we can even, you know, and you know, there's provisions in place for them. But they themselves, they're so adaptable and they're so willing to do whatever needs to be done, you know, to support their teachers and to support their school communities.
Yes, and I know that they're a very, very small minority, but children should never be used as excuses for parents' own particular views on an issue or whatever else. That's beyond the welfare of their child. What we want here, as Joe McKeown said in the programme the other morning, children shouldn't be used as weapons to put any particular view apart. All right, that's the message for everybody. Let's hope everything calms down in relation to it. But I certainly don't envy principals meeting parents at school gates or school doors and maybe having to impart the message, I'm sorry, you can't come into school today. But there is that aspect, I think, that's still out there, that if it's not underpinned by legislation, it's leaving principals in a very, very rocky place, telling children they cannot avail of school on a particular day. Mind you, where public health measures come in, we've asked this in the past, does that trump then all other rights? That's for the lawyers to work out, not for Clem. Meanwhile, Pádraig Clerkin, principal of the Irish Primary, or chief executive, I should say, of the Irish Primary Principals Network. Thank you very much for your time this morning, Pádraig, and I wish you a happy Christmas.
There today. With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge. Get Christmas all wrapped up at Whitewater.
Okay, we're going to Athy in just a moment, but first of all, this is International Disability Week. We're putting the focus on that just right across County Kildare with lots of events planned. We've been talking about it on the programme earlier this week. But the CSO has also issued yesterday its latest research on people with disability. It's based on the year 2019, so it's a bit behind the times, but that would be due to COVID and everything else. It finds that in employment, 44% of people with a disability were employed in 2019. 59% of people with a disability under 65 years either have a GP visit card or a medical card. €20,000, €212 was the median earned income of people with a disability in employment that year. In education, of students with a disability who sat the leaving certificate a couple of years ago, 43% of those with a disability enrolled in higher education, 42% enrolled in further education and training. That would leave, mind you, another 15%, which is not accounted for in the statistics I'm looking at. And as regards to housing and the housing assistance payment scheme, single applicants accounted for 37% of the people with a disability on the housing assistance payment scheme in 2019. Just some of the headline figures coming from that particular report. There is other research that has emerged also from the CSO in regards to that, in regards to building and constructions, earnings and labour costs in the market. We'll look at that maybe later on during the course of the programme this morning. But meanwhile, it's good morning to a Labour councillor on the Athy Municipal District, Aoife Breslin. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Clement, to everybody listening.
Now, 73 social houses, a development, Aoife, at Ardrew in Athy are being planned. That's a very, very built-up area already, is it not?
Well, it is. I mean, it has a certain amount of housing there. I wouldn't say it's a very built-up area. That's also the area, Clement, you rightly know that the SDR will be coming along as well. So, you know,
what is
a
that?
Lot of the traffic. The Southern Distributor Route.
Oh, right, okay.
Famous,
yeah.
The famous road for 40 years.
Yeah, but let's tell people where Ardrew is. We're talking about out on the Kilkenny Road, are we not, in the area of Fort Barrington?
Yeah, I was on the Kilkenny Road, up right across from the housing estate Dunbrain. Ardrew Meadows is across the road from there, and just behind that is where we propose to locate these units. But can I also say, as we're doing that, there are plans, and we've discussed this on your show before, in relation to a community playing pitch there as well. So there is green space, and we are investing in the area for community activities in the area, and part of this proposal will also have a community building in it. And as you know, Respond have a community building in Ardrew Meadows that a lot of the community use, and we use for meetings and for social events. So there is good social infrastructure, and there will be green areas in it, and there will be playing pitches. As you badly know, in this town we are lacking in pitches because of the amount of sports clubs we have.
All right, we're talking about the proposed development will comprise the construction of 73 social housing units. And made up of what kind of units?
There is a complete mixture. There are some two-storey houses. We have some bungalows in it. We have a number of one-bed apartments. We have a number of two-bed apartments. And we have some a number of four-bedroom houses. The one, and I will just stipulate, because I think this is something that I feel very passionate about, all the apartments will have their own hall door. I mean, and that is vital, I think, you know, to apartment living, absolutely.
And hold on a second there, Aoife. When you say they have their own hall door, sure, all apartments have their own hall door. What does that mean?
Their own it's not a shared entrance.
All right,
you know,
okay.
Absolutely. So, look, it's a unit in itself. And the other good thing is it allows us...
How would that work, by the way? I mean, apartments are generally built over a couple of stories.
These are two-storey apartments.
All right, I get you where you're coming from. So people on the upper story will have a door opening onto maybe a balcony or a pathway area. Just let me give people some of the numbers. There's 54 houses going up. I'm looking at the press release from the council. 50 will be two-storey, and four bungalows comprised of 4 one-bedroom, 24 two-bedrooms, 23 bedrooms, and 6 four-bedrooms. There will be 18 what's called triplex apartments. That's three stories, comprising of 18 one-bed apartments and 1 two-bed duplex apartment. A three-story apartment building in that area, which is primarily at most two-story houses, Aoife, what's your view of that?
Look, I mean, I've seen the plans. I like the plans. I think, you know, the architect department at Kildare County Council has worked fantastic and has come up with a great proposal. I would say to Glenn, have a look at them. They're on the website. It's not as if you're saying there's three-storey apartments, you know, like there's huge apartment blocks. They're far from it. These are very well-done units, in my view, so they are absolutely. And in the Respond building in Ardrew Meadows, there are two-storey apartments in it as well, in relation to it. So it is slightly keeping in the area. The big news in this is every day of the week in my clinic, I have people coming in looking for four-bedroom bungalows because of specific medical needs or whatever else. And this will allow us to take some of those people off and be able to adapt their houses for them. So it's a good news story.
All right. The proposal includes an estate community unit, which I think you've mentioned. I presume
absolutely.
That's like a community hall, is it?
It is.
A new access off Fort Barrington Road, on-street car parking of 141 spaces, public and private open space boundary treatments, new pedestrian and cycle connection to the south, public lighting and all the other ancillary works that go on with this. This is quite a major development, is it not?
It is quite a major development.
And what consultation, if any, has gone on with people in the other estates around the area, both social housing and otherwise?
At this moment in time, it is on Kildare County Council's website, so that you can look at the plans and people can make their options in relation to it. It is a partage. It will come before the councillors, I think, in around March. So, like, the views of everybody will be taken on board, and people can contact their local councillors and also make submissions on it. It is a very public process. But can you know our housing list? I mean, we are crying out to be able for people to be able to come off the housing list. People are living in dire circumstances. They're paying huge rents. I mean, I heard a story, whether it's true or not, this week, that a three-bedroom house in Athy was now looking for $1,700 a month. People can't sustain that.
No.
Absolutely not. But I would urge your listeners to look at the plans. It is a beautiful development. There is plenty of green space. It is well done. There's plenty of parking. There's plenty of, and even the gardens in it. You know, we're not talking about squeezing a massive estate into a tiny place. Far from it. And I do think credit should go to the architect's department because they have done some great work on this. And look, I mean, if people, by right, everybody has a right to a view. By all means, express that view. But I think when people look at it, they will welcome this proposal.
Yes, submissions or observations regarding this development, by the way, you have until Friday, 21st of January next at 4 p.m.
Yes.
And you can make your submissions to Kildare County Council either online, I suppose, or even in a hard copy or whatever else.
And can I just say, Clem, I've been on the programme discussing other planning that I may not think were ideally suited. So, you know, I'm not here just to support planning processes and the building of houses. It has to be right for the area. So it does. And you and I have discussed other planning, but we didn't think were particularly right for an area.
All right. It's a major development. Yes, housing is very badly needed. I'm astonished, Aoife, to hear you say 1,700. Is the price being quoted to rent a house in this high?
Well, it was said to me by somebody. I can't stand over it, but I do know. Look, you know, the door here is open every day of the week. People are coming in, and housing is the major issue. And to get a house to rent in this area is impossible. But somebody did in passing say to me they believed there was a house, and that was what the price is in it. We're now going to.
All right, okay. Once upon a time, Athy was down the country.
It's best now, place to live.
It's now part of the Dublin commuter belt. I'm with you on that, Aoife. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Glenn.
Athy Municipal District Labour Councillor Aoife Breslin regarding that proposed development, 73 new units. I think it's 73, isn't it? Yes, social housing units will be underway at Ardrew. If people are wondering around the Athy area, where is Ardrew? It's out in the Kilkenny Road, the Fort Barrington Road, Park Breed area, which will be well known to people in regards to that. Right, before we continue, we're going to be talking semi in a couple of minutes' time. Another report, by the way, from the CSO is regarding earnings and labour costs, the quarterly for 2021. They have just issued that. They say the COVID-19 crisis continues to have an impact on quarter three data, as we can expect that it would. And in regards to that, it shows, according to their estimates, earnings and labour costs quarterly release, average weekly earnings were €837 in quarter three 2021. Now, that's weekly earnings. Multiply that by four. And that is telling me that average earnings were €3,200. I don't think so a month. I'd be find it very hard to believe that's average, which says was an increase of 5.4% on the previous year. If it is average, I'd love to get one of those jobs. Other features of the preliminary results show that average hourly earnings were €25.31, and that was an increase from €24.38 in quarter three 2020. Average weekly paid hours, people were getting paid 33 hours a week as opposed to 32 the previous quarter. The average hourly total labour costs were €27.93 in the third quarter of this year, as opposed just a very, very small change, slightly dearer than the previous quarter. Average earnings in quarter three 2021, as I said, around €850 per week. Yeah, love those. And the job vacancy rate at the end of quarter three 2021 was 1.5%, an increase from 0.8%. I know sometimes these statistics can be hard to get a handle on, but at least that's where we are in relation to those anyway. Let's go to another set of statistics now, where it seems there might be some good news for the Irish motor industry, because November new car registrations are on the increase. I'm joined by the Deputy Director of the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, Tom Cullen. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Sam.
Are you Deputy or are you Director? Sorry.
I don't know. It's one of those titles. Yeah, I'm Deputy Director General. Yeah.
Yes, I thought that. I just want to be sure to give everybody the respect that they want. 1,000, or not that they want, that they should get from us here, which, of course, we always do. 1,131 new car registrations for November compared to 913 in November 2020. And what should we increase? I mean, it says over November 2019, a 48.6% increase. But all these numbers are relative, Tom, are they not?
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. It's such a unique trading environment we're in at the moment that really what we're trying to do is compare the 2021 figures against 2019 and pre-pandemic numbers. So we're still behind on that. The industry is trudging along in terms of new car sales. So to be honest, if you take pre-pandemic, and even now with the economic indicators being so good, the motor industry should be far ahead of where it is. We'll probably reach 108,000 new cars this year. You know, we got to about 125. We were at 148 before Brexit. But, yeah, the market should really be at about 155, 160,000. And, you know, that's where it should be. The difficulties were Brexit. The difficulties now are semiconductor issues, pandemic, all the other things.
Are the numbers indicative that the new car motor sales that the industry is recovering?
Yeah, recovering, a bit of a tricky one, but as I said, we're not where we should be in terms of new car sales, and we're nowhere near where we should be in terms of new car numbers if we're to reach ambitious climate change targets. So we are recovering, but yeah, it's tricky. I think if there weren't issues with semiconductors and deliveries and stuff and supply chain, I think we would have an increase in the new car market, predominantly because Brexit at the beginning of the year has meant we don't have the same volume of used imports coming in, so we'll see an increase in the new car market. But again, still, it'll trudge along. It's not going to get back to where it should be for some time. So, we are recovering. The motor industry, used car sales have been very, very good this year. There's a big demand, since I said that Brexit has sort of turned the tap off on the number of vehicles that were coming in from abroad, and sort of the high value in the used cars that are available within the Irish market. But that, we have our own issues with that as well with regard to supply as we run out of those used cars.
All right. Now, electric vehicles, we see the numbers basically are pretty low, are they not? 195 new electric vehicles in November compared to 61 in November of last year. There are 8,533 new electric cars registered in the year to date. The government have no hope of reaching the ambitious targets they've set by 2030, have they, based on those numbers?
Based on those numbers, no. We're really going to struggle. You know, you want to be positive about the electric vehicle market, and every year we have quite a considerable increase. So we're at 8,500 vehicles this year, 3,500 vehicles the year before. Next year, based on supply and availability, we could be up to 13,000 to 15,000 electric vehicles. But if you take it that the market will be 125,000, if you take it that we've 2.3 million cars we're a million miles away from getting to where we need to be in terms of climate change targets. So there's an awful lot that has to be done. And if we don't have a used car supply from abroad, well, that means that we have to produce our own cars here. And that means a strong new car market with plenty of alternative fuel vehicles, electric vehicles in that new car market. The only way we'll get them at the moment, because they're more expensive, is to continue with the incentives. And then if all the building blocks are put in correctly, then we've a chance of having a very, very good response to the climate change plan. And a very, very, we can put our own ambitious targets. But if we go along as we're going along now, and you see recently with the withdrawal of the plug-in hybrid grant, we can't have these ambitious targets if the funding's not in place to deliver it. So it's up to us as an industry, but it's up to government as well to deliver on that. And you're right, Glenn, you know, we've been here before with these ambitious targets. We've failed miserably to achieve them. And if the right building blocks aren't put in place, we'll fail to achieve this one as well.
All right, just looking at Kildare, by the way, 4,485 new car registrations this year compared to 3,877 last year in regards to that. Just some of the stats around those latest figures. The November new car registrations up 24% with electric vehicle supports vital to create a new, what's called a viable used car market. And by God, trying to get hold of a decent used car at the moment is certainly difficult enough because they're in short supply, and I suppose that's good for people who are trading in from that perspective. Meanwhile, Deputy Director General of the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, good talking to you, Tom. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Graham. Have a good weekend.
And you too. Happy Christmas to you. Now, that's that. Yesterday on the programme, we played a wonderful story by John McKenna from his newly released CD of radio essays from the Sunday Miscellany programme, which features on RTE. It's called I Knew This Place. Now, I have to say, we got an enormous reaction on it. And sure, I said, here, we might as well play another one today and see what happens. So, here is John McKenna's story in regards to the title of this one, by the way, is I Think It Might Be Some Romance. Sorry, I'm turning away from my microphone now because I'm doing something here. I think there might be some... Oh, no, this is Working on the Railway.
Working on the Railway. When I was in primary school, I'd spend an hour or two every afternoon in the signal cabin, waiting for my father to finish work. And then we'd drive the 10 miles home from Athy to Castledermot, and he'd talk about the railway. He had worked on the railway for most of his life. His father and brother had worked on the railway. And my mother's father and brother had worked on the railway. There's no denying it, he'd say. We're a railway family. By then, my brother was studying medicine and my sister was on her way to becoming a teacher. I was the last possible candidate for railway work. You wouldn't have to start at the bottom like I did, my father would say. If you had a good education, you could start in the office as a clerk. You could work your way up to station master and inspector. Inspector was the highest accolade my father could imagine. That would be the top of the tree as far as he was concerned. It's a good career and steady, and for a chap like you with a head on his shoulders, the sky's the limit. If you got a good leaving cert, you'd have all the options open to you. It's something you should think about. At the time, I just wanted to work on the trains. The idea of being stuck in an office held no appeal for an 11-year-old. Better still, I could be a guard on a goods train. The guard's van seemed like heaven to me, with its wood-burning stove and burnt black kettle. The hard wooden bunks, the sandwiches wrapped in newspaper, the door opening onto an exposed platform at the rear, the horizontal steps down, the red and green oil-burning lanterns on the back. It offered everything a boy could want. Freedom, privacy, travel, adventure, responsibility. I had visions of long trips from Dublin to Sligo, the stove burning brightly and the kettle singing while the wind and rain stormed outside. At home, I took over a disused rabbit hutch and hung sacks across the open sides and pretended it was a guard's van. If ever I worked on the railway, I decided, I wanted to be a guard. You'd soon grow tired of that, my father would say, but I didn't believe him. Who could grow tired of such an escapade? New stations, new people, but most importantly, the solitude in between. I didn't know the word solitude back then. I only knew the word aloneness. But it was that aloneness, that solitude, that isolation that appealed to me. I was never happier than when I was out walking the dogs, brandy and soda, over Rice's Hill, down through the rocks, and out past Half Mile Town. Out there, the countryside was deserted, just me and the dogs and my imagination. I dreamt of living in Joe Shea's derelict cottage on the banks of the River Lur. I spent summer days walking and imagining. Later in my teens, I walked and imagined and hoped I'd meet some Ruth in search of her redeemer. But all I saw was the occasional fisherman, as anxious to avoid me as I was to avoid him. Sure, have a think about it, my father would say, as we pulled into the yard at home. I will, I'd say. Years afterwards, I began at last to value my father's dream. He wasn't just interested in seeing me settled in a permanent and pensionable job with prospects. He loved the idea of the family continuing its connection with the railways. His own career had been thwarted as a result of his involvement in a strike, and his ambition of becoming a station master or an inspector had never been achieved. His job as station foreman in Athy was important to him, and he valued the position. But there was within him that might have been, that knowledge that he was intelligent enough and ambitious enough to have made it further up the ladder. But, he believed, his active involvement in the NATE union had stood in his way. I think he saw in me the chance for the family to make an even bigger mark in CIE. But I was to disappoint him.